call the April 10th Amherst Town Council meeting to order. Mr. McGuffin will jump in soon for the, he'll take care of the first one. First order, everybody would please silence their cell phones. The next item will be two. BNC would lead off with the Pledge of Allegiance. Mr. Thomas would do the invocation. During either one of these, if you are uncomfortable and wish to sit down, you may or leave. And if you elect to leave during the Pledge of Allegiance or the invocation, Captain Watts will get you after we're through and bring you back in. So if you all rise, please.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Lord, for this day. We thank you for this council. We thank you for your overwatch, Lord. We just ask for your Holy Spirit to be here, guide and direct, and let this be as you have it. We thank you for these people that put in place to oversee us, and may we support them. And we ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
Okay, the next item is a resolution from Mr. Richard Widener. I think each of you have a copy of it. I'll just hit the highlights. Mr. Widener served on town council from February 2003 to June 2006, then again from July 2008 to December 2013. He's a member of the Planning Commission from June 2006 through December 12th, and then he was on the IDA, correct?
IDA, and then Economic Development.
Right, the Economic Development and the IDA up until this year.
That's right.
So, I would entertain a motion from council that we affirm this resolution and to present it to Mr. Widener.
I make that motion.
I have a motion from Ms. Wheaton. May I have a second?
Second.
I have several seconds, so we'll just go with that. Is there any discussion? They're being done, Ms. Wheaton.
Aye.
Mr. Driscoll. Aye. Ms. Pigmon and Ms. Turner.
Aye.
Mr. Rodney, meet you in front right here, sir. And like I said, we kind of went over your highlights. It also details your time with the Virginia Baptist Disaster Relief, and your time with the Amherst Fire Department, with the Baptist Church. And I mean, it's full. We needed a heavy piece of paper to do this. Okay?
So digging into it, you know, the numbers.
I want to thank you very much for your time and your service. Okay. Now, if I would just ask you, I will give it to her so she can sign it, and I'll give it right back to you.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Serve all those years, it was a whole lot. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Next item. Ms. Morgan. Okay, so take me a minute, all right? First off, before we get to this, I'd like for everybody to give Ms. Morgan a hand. She's been promoted to the Deputy Town Manager. All of her other duties that she does also. So, it looks like this is your first time on the hot seat. So, the public hearing for the budget. Ms. Morgan, outline us here, please.
Great. So, the council has received a copy of the current budget as it's recommended for fiscal year 2025. The current budget does not include any tax increases. Current water and sewer rates also remain unchanged. And there is included a 50-cent garbage increase, going from $12 a month to $12.50 a month, and that's to keep up with the cost that the town incurs for that service.
Okay. Captain Watts, can you bring me the sheets for the public hearing, please? Okay, I am opening the hearing public hearing, and nobody has signed up. So, give everybody a moment. And I have closed the public hearing. By state law, we cannot vote on the budget tonight. Council members, if you will pull your calendars, we have a budget work session, the final work session set for April 25 at 6 p.m. here. We will also have dinner since it's at 6 o'clock. We can have something to eat on while we're doing this.
6 p.m. April 25.
Yes. All right, next item is the CIP. Ms. Morgan, it's going to be mostly your show tonight.
The town maintains a 5-year capital improvement plan. The process involves planning for items or projects that are $5,000 or more with a useful life of more than a year. This current year's plan includes the purchase of one police car, an automatic water meter system, and 2 grant-funded utility projects.
I am opening the hearing, the public hearing on the CIP. Nobody has signed up. Nobody has got forward. I am closing the public hearing. I will entertain a motion to accept the CIP plan as presented.
Make that motion.
A motion from Ms. Wheaton. May I have a second, please?
Second.
Okay, a second from Mr. Higginbotham. Ms. Wheaton, any comment?
Yes.
And Mr. Higginbotham, do you have any comments, sir? Does anybody else on council have any comments? If not, vote. Ms. Turner?
Aye.
Mr. Higginbotham?
Aye.
Mr. Driscoll?
Aye.
And Ms. Wheaton? Vote is carried 4-0-1. Next public hearing, oh, this is yours, Ms. Bevan, the outdoor display and storage.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Planning Commission has been wrestling with several code ordinance amendments to really make sure that our code is, our zoning code is as refined as it can be in regard to some issues that have come up recently in town. This is new language that would regulate and codify practices related to outdoor display and storage. We do currently have folks who outside of a business would have some display of items that are typically indoor items, and so this gives a square footage for that and allows that practice to be legal, and then also puts a limitation on it, and then also regulates outdoor storage at businesses.
Okay. I will open the public hearing, and Mr. Sundermarkey, you have 3 minutes, sir, and please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Town Council. I agree with the dissenting Planning Commission member that this outdoor display and storage ordinance is not needed. Not only is it not needed, this ordinance is 1,000 unintended consequences waiting to happen. First of all, this ordinance attempts to differentiate between display and storage without any supporting guidance. If it were me, I would claim everything is for sale and nothing is in storage. When I asked staff how this might be enforced, that conversation quickly got lost in hypotheticals of items that might be the same model where you might only be able to display one of those and have to put the rest in storage, or different colors or special options that might affect it. In the end, it's clear that this distinction is completely subjective. It will be impossible for citizens to follow and a nightmare for staff to enforce. Also, without supporting guidance, this ordinance attempts to distinguish between goods that are typically displayed outside and those that are typically displayed inside and prohibits the outside display of indoor goods. Let's think about that for a moment. Household items are typically displayed inside. So is food. Is this the end of community yard sales? Is this the end of farmers markets? Yes, there is an exception for one 20 square foot table. But setting aside how ridiculously small that allowance is, that table would need to be hidden from view in the backyard somewhere, because also according to this ordinance, you can't put that table in a parking lot or anywhere within the front yard setback. This ordinance completely bans outdoor storage of items for sale in residential areas. No exceptions. No more selling your car at the end of your driveway. No more selling a bicycle or lawnmower in your front yard. No more residential yard sales. Finally, outdoor storage is banned as an independent use. No exceptions. If you've been using an otherwise vacant lot for storage and sale of goods, it's over. I've enjoyed stopping by the vacant lot near the traffic circle over the years to see what's for sale on the weekends. No more. Our town manager is awesome, and I have no doubt that she would bend over backwards to avoid enforcing the most ridiculous aspects of this ordinance if it were to pass tonight. But Sarah won't be the town manager forever, and overly restrictive laws that require discretionary enforcement to make them tolerable is the antithesis of what President John Adams declared to be a government of laws and not of men. This ordinance is unnecessary. In its current form, it's an unenforceable mess. And only when the zoning complaints start pouring in will we realize the gravity of the mistake we've made. This ordinance should be forgotten as quickly as possible. It should never be passed into law. I thank you for your time.
Now we'll close the public hearing. Before we go to council, I would like, if council has no objections, I'm going to ask Ms. McGuffin to explain or address Mr. Sundermurthy's concerns. Is that fine with council?
Yes.
Okay.
So the impetus of this ordinance, and Mr. Sundermurthy came to see me, and he always is very, very thoughtful. In fact, you're going to have another public hearing on minor site plan, and I agree with the point that he brought up with that, and would ask council to actually add that language that he's doing. So he's very thoughtful, and many of the things that he brings up are real and legitimate issues. I don't want to in any way say that what he is saying is you know, spurious in any way. I think the challenge for us is right now there is no guidance. So what we have is, and I'll admit this is not my most elegant language I've ever come up with for a zoning ordinance, but we need to have some guidance that says, this is where you're allowed to have outside storage. If you're just having outside storage for a business, that needs to be screened. This has been the practice in the town. If you go down to GL's lot where he's got his lawnmowers, all those lawnmowers that are there being repaired are screened. They're not sitting there in a way that you can see all of that. So this has been practice, and we do have a section in the code that specifically says like things that are there for repair are inoperable. But what if somebody had, you know, for example, if we use the yard spot, what if somebody had at the yard spot 20 trailers waiting to be assembled before they were sold? That's storage. Citizens shouldn't be looking at that as they go by. So there is some real distinction that has to be made between when you're storing something to be sold in the future versus when you are displaying something as per the guidance in the code. I believe that the code does protect businesses having outdoor display for those items that are commonly sold outdoors. So I feel comfortable with this ordinance. I do agree that we will probably over time need to continue refining this, but I would not advise council to let the perfect be the enemy of the good. This is an improvement over what you have now. It is not perfect, and I will absolutely continue to work with Mr. Sundermurthy and other people who have issues with this ordinance. And I anticipate that I will probably, along with other things as we continue to refine the ordinance, bring things back to you that aren't quite right.
Okay. So I will entertain a motion. Well, we got to get the motion and the second, and then we have our discussions. Was yours?
I'd like to make a motion that I can ask a question.
Well, we got to get a motion for this amendment, for this zoning change, and a second, and then we open the floor to discussion.
Okay. So
you may I have a second, please?
I'll second.
Have a second from Ms. Turner. Now, since you made the motion, you get the first bite at the apple.
The only issue I see, and it's for right now, things are fine, but with the terminology on the same parcel, we could have instances in the future where somebody has a storage area on the next door parcel, on the parcel across the street. Do you foresee that?
So this ordinance as written would preclude that, and of course, as you know, the Planning Commission wrestled with that mightily. The Planning Commission, at the end of the discussion, determined that they did not want to have storage as an independent use, and so it would need to be on the same parcel. It is important to note, however, that the council can choose to not include that language and can actually then say outdoor storage may be on an adjacent parcel to an existing business or could be in independent of a business altogether. Thank you, Mr. Driscoll, for bringing that up, because that was a lively discussion at the Planning Commission level.
Ms. Turner.
I think the ordinance is a great start, and I think it should go as is.
Okay, let's open the floor back up for discussion.
I agree that it should go as is.
And Mr. Hagelbaum.
Still thinking about it already. It'd be a start, knowing that we're going to work to work in a better position.
So, working document in the process.
Yeah.
In progress. Okay, with that, I will call for a vote. Ms. Wheaton?
Aye.
Mr. Driscoll?
Aye.
Mr. Hagelbaum? Can we come back to you?
Can I ask a question?
We're in the middle of the road.
Oh, yeah, come back to me.
Ms. Turner?
Aye.
And Ms. Wheaton?
No need to come back, aren't you?
Okay. Motion is carried 4-0-1. Next item, public hearing on minor site plans. Ms. McGuff.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is a proposal that would add a minor site plan process to our zoning ordinance. This would really bring us into compliance with the practice of the county. Currently, we have a major site plan process, and anything that doesn't hit the need to do the major site plan. So you can put a commercial building in the town, and if it's under 2,000 square feet, you don't have to do a site plan currently. I think that we need to have an intermediate place between somebody just filling out a zoning certificate and then somebody having to do a major site plan. Coming into compliance with what the county has means that it will also, from an enforcement point of view, match up with what they're doing. We already do a lot with them in reference to working through their building department, their erosion and sediment control department. We use their development review committee, so this will line us up nicely. One comment I would make is Mr. Sundermurthy came to see me, and he brought up that as a residential property owner on a commercially zoned piece of property, the fact that it says any development on commercially zoned property would need one of these. He said, what if I want to put a garage in my backyard? And I said, well, I kind of think your property's already developed. And he brought up the point, but couldn't someone say that's a development on a commercially zoned lot? I think that's a fair point. As he said earlier, I won't always be here. I would ask council to add one word to that statement and say any commercial development on any commercially zoned lot. So that then what we're saying is if you have, because we have a lot of houses that are on commercially zoned property, and that way if somebody is doing a garage, a shed, anything like that that's residential, they don't have to do this minor site plan. They're going to go back to that same zoning certificate they're currently doing. So with that, I would turn it over to council and public hearing.
May I ask you to repeat that? Excuse me, that piece of language. Any commercial
development on a commercially zoned piece of property.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right. With that, I'm going to open the public hearing, and Mr. Sundermurthy.
Mayor, Town Council. Site plans are expensive. Because of this, our current laws are carefully crafted to apply only to large-scale projects. Currently, we require site plans for commercial, industrial, and institutional buildings in excess of 2,000 square feet. We require them for schools, hospitals, and clubs, for multi-unit residential projects, for mobile home parks, for special uses over 2,000 square feet, for conditional zoning projects, and for townhouse developments. Anything less only requires an informal sketch. For the first time ever, this ordinance would require site plans for all activity on all commercially zoned properties. It doesn't matter how small your project or business is. If you're in a commercial zoning district, a site plan will be required. And while we're calling these minor site plans, these requirements are no picnic and are way beyond the informal sketches that we currently require. Minor site plans must be to scale, No one will be making these themselves. A surveyor will need to be hired, and the cost will likely be in the thousands of dollars, regardless of the project size. Easements, rights-of-way, and other reservations must be surveyed and plotted. Topography and floodplain elevation must be measured. Water courses, marshes, rock outcroppings, and wooded areas must be marked. Exact placement of existing buildings, exact locations of existing water mains, culverts, drains, pipe sizes, grades, and their direction of flow, dam break, inundation zones, and an assessment of their impact on the proposed development, exact locations of proposed buildings, exact locations of streets, curbs, sidewalks, and public right-of-ways, exact layout of off-street parking, exact layout of proposed utility lines, plants, landscaping, and location of existing trees, exact location of waste disposal facilities, building elevations. What is currently done with an informal sketch will now be so expensive and so onerous that it will place many small projects and business startups out of reach for our citizens. And worse, this ordinance will not only affect commercial activity as currently written. I happen to live in a commercial zoning district like many others in town. My 2,000 garden shed project could now cost $10,000 because my new development has now triggered a minor site plan review. A previous planning commission and a previous town council recognized that formal site plans for small projects can place those projects out of reach because of cost. That is why they carved out an exception for small projects. Informal sketches have worked for decades. Yes, we've had some problems recently, but those problems could be easily fixed by asking the right questions during the zoning permit process. What kind of surfacing do you have? How long has that surfacing existed? Have you recently expanded that surfacing? These questions would resolve the problems we are now having without the crushing expense of site plans for small projects. Please don't create a nightmare for us that live in commercial zoning districts by requiring site plans for anything we do. And please don't kill off the small-scale economic activity in our town by destroying the small project site plan exception. Thank you.
Once again, if it's okay with council, I'm going to let Ms. McGuffin address his concerns to give us a little more insight. Is that good? Okay.
So the adding of that one word does take care of the question on the residential side. As to the point about this will cost money, that is 100% true. The way that this is structured, it really will require somebody to have a surveyed piece of property and to actually have a set of drawings that are to scale. At the end of the day, I think that the time frame when we could do this with a sketch on the back of your zoning certificate really has passed. The regulatory framework in today's world for what we need to do to make sure people are coming into compliance with what the state requires is very different than what it was when this was originally put into place. I don't think we're doing a great job if we don't do it. With that being said, I defer to council's direction on this.
I will entertain a motion to accept this revision.
I'll make that motion.
A motion from Ms. Turner. May I have a second?
Second.
Second from Mr. Driscoll. What was yours, Ms. Turner?
I don't have anything to add at this point.
Okay. Mr. Driscoll.
Regarding drawings and surveys, I think in some cases, there would be an existing drawing that would just require a small modification, and so the costs may not be what you think they are.
Okay. One question before we move on. Is everybody happy with the change that Ms. McGuffin put in about?
I mean, I think that's fair. He brings up a really good point, and I think that's a fair...
Okay.
So
that's out of the discussion. That's going to be put in there.
Yes.
So the other is just everything else, Ms. Wheaton.
As far as making minor changes, like if you just want to put a building up in his backyard, you have to get a site plan and all that.
He doesn't, because that's what we're changing.
Right, we're taking the residential part out of it because I mean that was a valid point that pulling the residential out is the correct thing to do to keep that with the zoning certificate.
So, do you agree with everything you said?
I do agree that it is going to impose a cost. I absolutely would not try to lead council to the idea that this is a free thing for someone who is doing a development. My concern at this point is I think we have We have hit a point from a regulatory standpoint that if we don't do this, we are leaving the, we're going to miss things. And it's not just a matter of the surfacing requirement or something like that. It is the question of things like, where does the drainage occur? Where is the water line? Where's the sewer line? Making sure that those things are surveyed and on something before somebody goes and puts in a parking lot, when you're talking about doing it from a commercial point of view, that's an important thing to do. And obviously, I mean, as Mr. Driscoll said, if somebody's adding on to a commercial minor site plan, they can take the existing minor site plan they have and they can scale draw something onto it. There's nothing in this that says you have to have engineered sealed drawings or anything like that. It says it has to be to scale and you have to continue to
What's the effect on residential, if any?
There should be no effect on residential because we pulled that out.
Okay. Vote, Ms. Turner.
Aye.
Mr. Higginbotham.
Aye.
And Mr. Driscoll.
Aye.
And Ms. Wheaton.
Aye.
Motion is carried 4-0-1. Ms. McGuffin, public hearing on short-term rentals.
This is the short-term rental language, just the portion that needs to go into the ordinance that came from council, has been through the commission. Mrs. Kemp pulled the management plan out to put in the definitions, but other than that, this is very consistent with what council and the commission has already been working on.
I'll open a public hearing. Nobody signed up to speak. I'm closing the public hearing. May I have a motion to accept the language that comes from the Planning Commission?
So moved.
From Mr. Driscoll, may I have a second, please?
I'll second that.
And a second from Ms. Turner. Mr. Driscoll, any comments, sir? Ms. Turner, any comments?
No, I just think this is a good compromise, and it kind of solves the problems that some of us had with it. So I'm pleased with the language, and I support it.
Anybody else, Ms. Wheat? And Ms. Bigmore.
What language did they change?
This is really to add in the concept of the management plan. So if you remember when council discussed this before, it went back to the commission. There was a lot of discussion about making sure that people would have to bring in with their short-term rental application a management plan that talked about, you know, Where's the fire suppression? Where are they parking? What are the boundaries of the property? What's the rules that go along with it? And that management plan, that they would register annually and update any changes to that management plan so that we would have better information, that the council would have better information as you're acting on these applications. So this, at this stage, consistent with what you discussed at council, went to the Planning Commission, remained the same, and it's just coming back to you for adoption.
Vote, Ms. Wheaton?
Aye.
Mr. Higginbotham?
Aye.
Mr. Turner?
Aye.
Motion is carried 4-0-1. Okay, next item is public comment.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you.
Oh,
thank you,
yes, sir. Thank you.
Yes, we got ready. Thank you.
Just a reminder, 3 minutes, and we will start off with Mr. Steve Martin.
Thank you, Mayor. My name is Steve Martin, and I own Martin's Paint and Body Shop. I'd like to thank the Planning Commission for their recommendation to add surface treating to be allowed along with asphalt, concrete, brick, or paving stone for the surfacing of driveways and parking spaces at businesses within the town. While I was hoping gravel would be allowed, surface treating would be a fair compromise and a less of a hardship on small local businesses than asphalt. As most of you already know, the cost of everything has gone up, and running a business is even more difficult post-COVID. The cost of asphalt has increased over 300% since the 2003 ordinance was enacted. For reference, the small area between the circle and the motel that was used to display Mr. Childress's rental equipment cost over $20,000 to asphalt. He has since relocated both his electrical business and his equipment rental business, along with his 17 employees and his tax revenue outside of the town limits. We need to decrease the financial burden on local businesses because their employees and their customers coming into town will benefit the other businesses here. Evidently, our forefathers understood the importance of encouraging business growth in the town with the designation of the Central Business District. Rules and ordinances were set up differently to benefit those businesses. They don't require off-street parking, and 30-year-old buildings that have gravel surfacing may continue even if the business is sold. Therefore, allowing a business located a half a mile outside of the Central Business District to at least have surface treating as an option is more business friendly. We all love the small town charm here in Amherst, but that will suffer if the outdated 2003 ordinance is not changed. Commercial landowners and potential small local businesses won't be able to afford asphalt. We'll all have to sell to mega business operations with longer hours, more traffic, and more noise. Residents said they wanted more green space and trees within the town, not more asphalt. Asphalt is made from petroleum products and not good for our environment. It is hot and negatively contributes to climate change. It is impervious, which negatively contributes to water runoff, soil erosion, pollution of creeks and streams, and driving hazards when water enters a roadway, causing hydroplaning. The county does allow surface treating at businesses along 29, and I hope you will do the same. Please don't tell us you're business friendly. Show us. Thank you.
And for Tree Peak performance, Mr. Sullivan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Town Council. The war on gravel needs to stop. While we can feel good that most of us are protected as non-conforming uses, we are essentially telling our neighbors in town to do as we say, but not as we do. We continue to use our own existing gravel parking lots and driveways while we smugly smile and wave to our neighbors who can't have the same privileges as us because we got here first. It's protectionism, it's unfair, and it's wrong. Yes, the Americans with Disabilities Act, or ADA, requires hard surfacing for accessible parking spaces, but that requirement is only for the accessible spaces and not for the entire lot. And when Congress passed the ADA, they recognized that small businesses may not be able to afford the expenses of ADA requirements, so they carved out an exception for small businesses. If your business is below a certain size, you are welcome to comply, but you do not have to. Additionally, ADA requirements for existing structures are only triggered when alterations or renovations surpass a certain threshold. Congress wanted to prevent the ADA from crushing small businesses. Our town surfacing law, as it's currently written, contains no small business exception. If it's a driveway or parking lot, it cannot be gravel. In fact, as it is right now, it can't even be surface treated. And we don't care how small your business is or how crushing of an expense it would be to comply. It makes me sad that we would treat each other this way. It makes me sad that we would take privileges for ourselves while denying those privileges to others. Gravel driveways and parking lots don't hurt anyone. Our town surfacing ordinance threatens the livelihoods of our neighbors over cosmetic concerns. And even worse, our cosmetic concerns are full of hypocrisy, since we failed to pave our own existing driveways while forcing them to pave theirs. Jesus said, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you." None of us would want to be treated this way. Thank you.
Okay, next item, consent agenda. I will entertain a motion to accept the minutes as presented. Motion in front, may I have a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion?
No.
Please?
I'm just sorry.
Went right to the chase. Mr. Driscoll. Mr. and Ms. Trump. Motion is carried 4-0-1. Next item, Ms. Turner, what is the, Ms. Turner would like to exclude a check from the check register for vote. So what check number was that, Ms. Turner?
Tracy, do you know what it is?
Oh, no, not off the top of my head, no.
Okay, so I don't have that check. I didn't highlight it.
Okay, so we'll just go with
it's whatever Gil Har- there is a check for Gil Harbor Corporation. I'd like to exclude that from the
So we're going to exclude the Hill Hardware check in the first vote. So approval of the check register. May I have a motion, please? Motion? In the second?
Second.
Okay, we got it. Any discussion with that? Ms. Turner, vote. All right, that one is carried 401.
Okay, the check number is 5985.
Okay, now we are voting on check 5985, which was written to your hardware. May I have a motion to accept that check?
So moved.
Okay, we'll just switch it this time. Mr. Driscoll, you made the motion. Ms. Wheaton, you made the second. Is there any discussion? Ms. Turner?
Upstate.
Ms. David Bobby?
Aye.
Mr. Driscoll?
Aye.
And Ms. Wheaton. Motion is carried 3011. Okay, next item everybody has in their package. You have the staff reports. If there's any questions, you can contact Ms. McGuffin or Ms. Morgan. The minutes are attached for the Planning Commission and Robert E. Lee Soil and Water. Discussion items, Ms. McGuffin, the VDH application for replacement of water lines.
So as I'm sure Council will remember, we have talked about the fact that we don't want to take on any new debt for fiscal year 30. When you have a significant water and wastewater debt that will fall off of your budget. However, our engineer has encouraged us to apply for VDH funding for water line replacements for East Monitor, Christian Springs, and Huff Creek. These are all three lines that are undersized for the number of people that they serve. We have actually had people want to get onto the Christian Springs line, and we have been unable to add them because we are out of capacity on that line. These were lines that were originally built by the developers of those lots, and then the town accepted them. So they don't have all the things we put on them. They're not sized the same way we size them today. They don't have fire suppression. So this is an opportunity to really bring those lines up to standard. That being said, I'm requesting that you approve us applying for this. If we get an offer letter from VDH that is heavily loan, then I will recommend that we decline that offer. So once we get an offer, we can determine whether it is in our financial interest to accept it or not. But I'm asking for permission to apply.
Okay. I will entertain a motion to apply for the VDH replacement of water line.
I'll make that motion.
A motion from Ms. Turner. May I have a second, please?
Second.
Second from Ms. Turner. Ms. Turner, any comments?
No.
Ms. Higginbotham, any comments? The remainder, any comments? Okay, we will vote. Ms. Wheaton?
Aye.
Mr. Driscoll?
Aye.
Mr. Higginbotham?
Aye.
And Ms. Turner?
Aye.
Motion is carried 401. Ms. Morgan, they approved the application for SCADA.
So the recent sewer system project has been completed with roughly $107,000 in USDA grant funds still remaining to be expended. With the help of the town engineer, USDA has allowed us to spend these funds on a new SCADA system for the wastewater treatment plant. Due to the cost of this expense, that would mean that roughly $177,093 of town funds wouldn't be needed to make up the difference. We're requesting that since we have a healthy general fund balance, that we use money from the general fund to meet the rest of this expense. And if council agrees, we're requesting the appropriation of that amount from the general fund.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion for the appropriation for the SCADA.
I'll make a motion.
A motion?
I'll make
it. Okay. From Ms. Wheaton, second?
I'll second.
Okay. Ms. Wheaton, any comments? Ms. Turner, any comments? Anybody else, any comments? All right, vote, Ms. Wheaton.
Yeah, we're aye.
Okay, Mr. Driscoll?
Aye.
Mr. Higginbotham?
Aye.
And Ms. Turner?
Aye.
Motion is carried 401. Set the public hearing for code amendments. Ms. McGuffin?
This would be to set the public hearing for the surfacing code amendment, which has been discussed for these many months, and which the Planning Commission has now passed on to the council. And we would ask that for next month's meeting.
I will entertain a motion to set a public hearing for this next month.
I'll make that motion.
Motion from Ms. Turner, may I have a second?
Second.
Second from Mr. Driscoll. Ms. Turner, any discussion?
No.
Mr. Driscoll?
No.
Anybody else? With that, Ms. Turner, vote.
Aye.
Ms. Higginbotham?
Aye.
Mr. Driscoll?
Aye.
And Ms. Wheaton?
Aye.
Motion to carry, public hearing will be set next month. Next one, there is a vacancy on the EDA from where we just presented Dickey his certificate for his many years, and we have an application for somebody that has expressed interest. It has been handed to each one of you. Mr. Thomas is the one that led us in the invocation today. I'm thinking if anybody's got any questions real quick, he can probably answer them for you. If not, we'll call for a vote. If not, I will entertain a motion to accept Mr. Thomas' application for the EDA. A motion from Ms. Turner, may I have a second?
Second.
Second from Mr. Driscoll. Does anybody have anything they want to say to Mr. Thomas? Like, welcome to the board.
I was going to.
Okay. All right. Vote, Ms. Turner.
Aye.
Mr. Higginbotham.
Aye.
And Ms. Wheaton. All right. Motion carried 401, and I can say welcome to the board. All right. Next. Matters from staff, Ms. Tracy.
I just want to thank everybody again for the promotion and just being so supportive this past month, and all the citizen comments on the Facebook post, and everybody was so nice, and I didn't even know half the people, but thank you all.
Ms. Baker?
No, sir.
Carol?
Ms. Baker? Mm-hmm.
Here?
Yes, sir, I do.
You had it, look.
As y'all know, Ms. McGuffin has already told you that Becky achieved her Class 1 wastewater operator, which I'm very proud of. Operator Mythos, the number 11 is the golden number. That's when you carry a Class 1 in water and a Class 1 in wastewater. Becky has joined the ranks of those very, very few people in the state of Virginia. And we are extremely proud of her effort and the tenacity that she put in to get that. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Mr. Myers has just started his road that Becky has already finished. He has received his Class 3 water operator's license. And again, we're very proud of all of them. Very few of them are getting them on their first try for Class 3. It's closed book. You have to know your stuff when you go into it. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. And thank your whole staff. And that just shows dedication to the town and what they want to do for themselves. Cap Watts. Okay. Citizens' comments. There are no more comments. Matters from council. Ms. Turner.
I don't have anything.
Mr. Higginbotham?
No.
Mr. Driscoll?
Nope.
And Ms. Wheaton?
Yes, sir.
With that, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So
second? All those in favor, say go home.